den, vážení televizní diváci. Lord Alf Dubs je členem britské horní sněmovny. Když mu bylo 6 let, jako Alfred Dubs přijel z Prahy na jaře roku 1939 jako jedno dítě, 6leté dítě ve Wintonově Kindertransportu. Tím pádem si zachránil život. Je pro nás velkou ctí, že ho máme v dnešním rozhovoru Britských listů. Mezitím udělal obrovskou kariéru a v Británii je členem horní sněmovny. Je mu nyní 87 let. Lord Alf, can I ask you, do you remember anything from living in Prague in the 30s?
Dobrý den. Já jsem skoro všechno zapomněl. Musím se omluvit. Já nemám praxi, but I can answer in English if that's all right.
That is fantastic. It doesn't matter. We can speak English. How was it in Prague in the 30s? What do you remember about it?
Well, I was 6 years old when I left. I think it was in July 1939. I remember when the Nazis occupied Prague. We had to tear a picture of President Beneš out of my school book and stick in a picture of Hitler. German soldiers everywhere. I can remember all that. My father was Jewish, my mother wasn't. My father left immediately when the Germans occupied. My mother tried to get permission to leave and was refused, so she put me on a Kindertransport. So I remember Prague station, anxious parents saying goodbye to their children, a long journey, two-day journey. When we got to the Dutch border, the older ones cheered. Remember, I was 6 years old. I was one of the youngest. The older ones cheered because they're out of reach of the Nazis. I knew it seemed important, but I didn't understand why. I was looking for windmills and wooden shoes, which I couldn't see. And we then got on the boat, Hook of Holland, to Harwich and then to Liverpool Street.
And your father was in London to meet you?
I was very lucky. Some of them didn't have family to meet them. I was very lucky. Yes, my father was there to meet me at Liverpool Street Station. Yes.
And your mother eventually got her visa and managed to get into Britain then?
Very fortunately. I mean, when they refused her permission, they threw her down the stairs and said permission refused. But they threw her passport after her. And so eventually, at the last minute, she got an exit permit. And she arrived in London on the 31st of August. And you'll remember the war started with Germany attacking Poland on the 1st of September. So it was absolutely the last minute.
Well, it was a narrow escape. I'm just in one of my film courses here at Glasgow University. We've just been discussing this film with Hugo Haas, Czech actor, Jewish actor from 1933. There's a fantastic jazz soundtrack to that film written by his brother Pavel Haas. And he applied for a visa to go to Britain. It was refused. And he was killed, of course, in a concentration camp. How was it in Britain for a young boy who comes from Prague, knows nothing about it? You just went normally to school, then you studied at university. How did you like it?
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that. First of all, I spoke Czech, I spoke German, but I spoke perhaps one or two words of English only. So I had to learn English. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, but, you know, when you're 6 years old in the school playground, survival means you have to learn the language. So that wasn't too bad. But during the war, the Czech government in exile had a Czech school in Wales. And I went to that for 2 or 3 years, all right, with fellow Czechs. It was in the middle of Wales, a place called Abernant. And that was quite a nice sort of 200 of us Czech refugee children during the war.
And only then afterwards you went into normal English school and you studied economics?
Eventually I went to the London School of Economics, yes, and I studied economics and politics. Yes, I did that.
Now, this is obviously a fantastic experience of many, many years ago, but of course it has, you've been doing, I suppose, on the basis of this experience, your work with current refugees, and I know that there are statues. There's a statue in Liverpool Street to these children, and there's a kind of another monument at Prague railway station. They all revere it, but they don't want to do anything for similar refugee children now. How do you feel about that?
Well, I've been to the statue. We've had several events at Liverpool Street Station, and obviously this is very important. But can I say my argument on behalf of child refugees should not be based upon my background, but of course I'm emotionally involved with it. And it's also had one advantage, that because I came as an unaccompanied child refugee to Britain in 1939, it is quite hard for the government, when they're feeling unsympathetic, to actually criticize unaccompanied child refugees too much, because it looks as if they're criticizing me personally. So politically, it's quite helpful. And emotionally, I'm obviously very involved with the issue. Mm-hmm. So it's all been, that has been positive, but it's been a political struggle. And some European countries have done better, and the Czechs have not done all that well on the issue, I'm afraid.
I know the Czechs basically haven't received a single child refugee, and they are saying that it's a security risk. Is it a security risk?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just an excuse. When you think of other countries, the Germans, the Swedes, the French, the Portuguese, they're all happy to take, or willing to take, child refugees, particularly after the dreadful fire in Moria on the Greek island of Lesbos. So I think it's just an excuse for not doing it. And I'm afraid in that the Czech government, the Hungarian government, the Polish and the Slovak governments all seem to be similarly unsympathetic to the argument.
What do we do about it? I mean, you've scored this incredible success in the House of Lords a few days ago when you actually had this law or whatever proposal passed that children should be allowed to join their families in Britain even after Brexit, but Boris Johnson will kind of vote against it in the House of Commons, no?
Well, we'll have to see what happens. It still hasn't quite finished in the Lords, and it'll then go to the Commons, and clearly there'll be a lot of pressure. Look, in 2016, I moved an amendment which went from the Lords to the Commons. The Commons rejected it. It came back to the Lords, and then the government accepted it. Now, that was a different government. That was David Cameron, and Theresa May was Home Secretary. I think it's disappointing that the Czech government doesn't want to do it. You know, I feel very emotionally attached to the Czech Republic, and I feel sad that they don't want to do anything with child refugees. I understand that's the policy. And I was going to go, if it hadn't been for the pandemic, I was going to go to Prague at the invitation of a Czech member of the European Parliament, and we're going to have a discussion in Prague about what could be done to motivate the Czech government to help. But of course, that meeting didn't happen. I couldn't go to Prague because of the pandemic. I hope we can do it sometime in the future.
Well, maybe you could use this opportunity to explain it. Is it maybe, I don't know, I don't want to be too nasty here, but is it maybe racism or the fear of a different culture? Because, of course, the Czechs are very, as a nation, it's still very kind of East European and homogeneous. And they may say, okay, very well, okay, they were Jewish children, but this is all an alien culture, mostly Muslims and all that kind of thing, and you never know. How would you actually counterbalance this? How would you actually try to persuade them that this is nonsense, or is it nonsense?
Well, I think it's basically nonsense, yes. Look, I think the world has changed, the world has moved on, and most of Europe has moved on, and the Czechs and Poles and Hungarians and so on have been left behind. We are going to be in the future a much more multicultural, much more diverse world, and our countries are going to be more diverse. But the real argument is that we're talking about children, we're talking about young people, we're talking about people who are extremely vulnerable, who fled oppression, war, persecution. I was talking to a Syrian boy who said to me he saw his father killed in front of him by a bomb, either in Aleppo or Damascus. Terrible experiences these young people have been through. And surely a bit of humanity on the part of European countries say yes. We're talking about small numbers anyway, but we'll welcome you. And we'll welcome you as part of a Europe-wide approach. I'm arguing in Britain we should be part of a Europe-wide approach in order to take people, particularly from the Greek islands, also, I think, from Calais. And so it's humanity, it's humanitarian. And the Czechs have got a very important democratic and humanitarian tradition. And I would have thought this would fit in well with that tradition. And I would very much hope that the Czech government will think again. Small numbers, but it would be important in principle. And if we make the life of one human being decent and proper and safe, that's worth doing.
It is very important. It is Doctors Without Borders last week published an appeal saying there are still about 5,700 refugees in Moria after the fire in that camp, which who are basically homeless, and that there are about 5,000 children, refugee children scattered all around the Greek islands. And yet the European Union hasn't really moved a finger about it. Are European governments so incredibly afraid of extreme right-wing parties? Or anyway, I just don't understand it. Priti Patel, the British Home Secretary, what motivates these people to, I should really probably be asking them, to be so hostile towards child refugees?
Okay, first of all, can I go back a bit? I'm sorry to just differ a little bit. Some of the other EU countries have responded to the Greek government's request.
Okay.
Germans, and I think the French and the Portuguese and so on. So it's not that the EU has said no entirely, but there isn't a Europe-wide agreement, because some countries like Czechs, Poles, don't want to be part of a European-wide agreement. What motivates Priti Patel? Priti Patel's family came and was welcomed to Britain as an East African nation. And I think she's behaving like people who say once they've got inside, they pull up the drawbridge, if you understand, the drawbridge of a castle, you pull it up to keep the others out. And I think it's very disappointing. I'm afraid the issue of migrants and refugees and refugee children has become a hotter issue since the Brexit. Can I say the Brexit referendum? I think was a disastrous result, but I think it's polarized opinion a bit. But I still believe that in Britain, child refugees, if the argument is put, are more popular than you'd think. That more people in Britain, not all, some are against, but more people in Britain would say we've got to be humanitarian and we've got to give a welcome to some of these children. And I think that's still the mood. And I think Priti Patel is out of line with it. So what motivates her, I don't know, but I think she's wrong and she's running against majority British opinion.
Well, you're rightly saying that the Germans have been very good, and the Swedes and the Dutch, whatever. But these politicians in the other countries, do they really kind of think that there is political capital in it to whip up hostility against refugees in general and China refugees in particular?
Well, unfortunately, some of the extreme right-wing parties in Europe have used the argument against refugees to try and get electoral advantage. We've seen that in Germany, where Angela Merkel, bravery has been met by success for the AfD. We've seen it in France, for the National Front did well. We've seen it in other countries, in Austria and so on. So I'm afraid the extreme right-wing parties are using this as an issue in order to get advantage. And that is very shabby and dirty politics. But having said that, I still believe what we all have to do is to explain to the public opinion and keep public opinion on our side. And one of my missions in Britain has been to actually keep explaining it wherever I can, if I go to churches, schools, synagogues, wherever it is, and explain what we want to do, what we're doing, and why. And if public opinion is sympathetic, governments are more likely to accept the argument.
So basically, you were saying that this bill is still going through the House of Lords, but nevertheless, quite a lot of people of the House of Lords have voted for it. And if it is approved in the House of Lords, it will go back to the House of Commons. Are you lobbying people in the House of Commons as well, or how does it work?
Well, first of all, it's that amendment has already passed the House of Lords. We're doing one last stage, but that amendment is already part of the bill that will go to the Commons. So the argument is now we've got to start lobbying in the Commons. We've tried to make sure this is not the property of one political party. And, too much sunshine in London.
Okay. All right. Fantastic.
I've tried all along to make sure that these arguments and these parliamentary measures are not done by one political party, but they have support across parties. And we've been looking for support from Labour Party, yes, of course, Lib Dems, crossbenchers or independents, and as many conservatives as we can find, and the SNP, the National Party. And I think we've got most of the opposition parties on our side, and we're trying to hope with hope that some of the Conservative MPs will support us. A few did last time, and we want more of them on our side. But you know, who's to say? Our government is very hard line at the moment, much more hard line than the government under Theresa May or before that under David Cameron. And that is a problem. But we're certainly lobbying the Commons, and we're certainly using whatever we have, faith communities, community groups, individuals, all to lobby their MPs to try and get support. It's called politics, but we're trying to do it. But essentially, this is not the property of one political party. I'm repeating myself. I'm saying that we're getting support for this across the political spectrum. But of course, it's the Conservatives we need more of.
This is a very good lesson also for the Central European countries, this all-party approach. I think it is important to emphasize this, that actually you shouldn't only be talking to the government, but you should also be appealing to the public, to appeal to their humanity, and also to whichever opposition parties there are, and start general public debate about it. Lord Alf, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very much for all your work for these people that really do need help. Vážení televizní diváci, děkujeme vám za pozornost. Nashledanou.
Děkuju.